Mr. Speaker.
Order.
Every now and again in this House, we get an opportunity to debate something which talks to the defining difference in philosophy of the political parties who are represented here.
Todd Muller, the Bay of Plenty MP for National, the largest of the seven parties in this Parliament, split down the middle over ratifying the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, negotiated and signed by the government, and now under scrutiny in the House. It's already been through the first part of the process, an investigation by the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Select Committee, which received over 6,000 submissions and heard 255 of them. The committee's report has been tabled in the Chamber and now awaits the government's response, due before the last week in July. Meantime, the government introduced a bill this week containing all the amendments to existing law that will be required if the treaty is ratified. Todd Muller was speaking in the bill's first reading on Thursday, as Rhys Lyon reports.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement Amendment Bill passed its first reading by 62 votes to 59. The government, supported by ACT and United Future, as well as Labour's Phil Gough, who crossed the floor to vote in favour of the bill despite opposition to the legislation from the rest of his party. A point not lost on Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee Chairman Mark Mitchell.
So what I find very interesting is that we're not going to hear from the Honourable Phil Gough why, as a past Trade Minister, he supports this agreement. The interesting thing, the Honourable Phil Gough, no economic portfolio, no trade-related portfolios.
That first reading speech from Mark Mitchell got this response from Labour's Grant Robertson.
Stop playing games, Mr Mitchell. Stop playing games and give an honest debate about why you think New Zealanders should support this agreement, because that's what people want to hear.
In launching the debate, Trade Minister Todd McClay had sought to outline specifically what the bill does.
Key amendments contained in the bill enable the application of preferential tariff rates for imports originating from TPP countries, increasing New Zealand's overseas investment screening thresholds for significant business assets from $100 to $200 million, and implementation of TPP intellectual property obligations, allowing New Zealand to bring TPP into force along with our trading partners.
But concerns with the trade deal's negotiation process were voiced by Labour's Trade and Export Growth spokesman, David Clark.
This National Government has destroyed a bipartisan approach to trade that has existed for decades. They have destroyed a convention that saw the leading parties in the Parliament work together for the long-term interests of this country. And they've done that through a willfully arrogant approach to the TPP negotiations.
Meanwhile, another National member of the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, David Bennett, had his own take on the opposition's views on the TPP.
And I can tell you why the Labour Party are doing that, because they are captured by the union movement. They always have been, always will be, and they are representing the far left of their party. If we look at the New Zealand First Party, well, we know the New Zealand First Party is just against trade. They're just against any links with the real world. Then we have the Green Party. Now, the Green Party are actually a principled party when it comes to trade. They just don't believe in it.
The Greens member of the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, which spent 3 months examining the trade deal, is Kennedy Graham.
I highlighted the shortcomings of the procedural observance by the government in the select committee process, and even our constitutional shortcomings in according full powers to the executive and no real role to the legislature in the examination of major international treaties such as the TPP.
And another member of that committee is New Zealand First's Fletcher Tabatow.
And let's be honest, this is perfectly good legislation if the intent of this government is to sail us up the river.
Though not of that view was ACT's David Seymour.
Mr Speaker, this is a great day for the trading nation New Zealand.
ACT's David Seymour. After passing first reading, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement Amendment Bill was sent to the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, which has until November the 12th to report it back to the House.
That report from Rhys Lyon, and he'll be back later with some rather gloomy news from the committee rooms. While, as well as getting that TPP bill on its way before this week's adjournment and the budget, the government had three bills passed this week. One extends the time that the Southern DHB will be governed by a commissioner until a new board is elected in 2019. The second amends the Building Act to improve the system for managing earthquake-prone buildings. and the third extends GST to cover transactions online, makes a number of changes to the student loan scheme, including the sharing of information between the IRD and the Australian Tax Office on student loan borrowers, and brings a new residential land withholding tax affecting foreign house buyers, the subject of more controversy following the government's publication of new data on Tuesday. And the inspiration for this question the next day for Building and Housing Minister Nick Smith from Nationals List MP Jian Yang.
Does this data support the claims made last year that 40% of buyers in Auckland are from China?
No. There is no possible interpretation of the data that would support the claim that 40% of buyers are from China. Only 444 of the buyers had tax residency in China, or 0.7% of the property bought and settled in the six-month period.
And that gave Nick Smith's national backbenchers, including Jian Yang, all they needed to attack the Labor Party in the general debate following Wednesday's question time.
Dr. Jian Yang.
Now, Mr. Speaker, as the only Chinese Member of Parliament, I would like to join my colleagues and demand Labor to apologise and demand Mr. Phil Twyford and Mr. Andrew Little to apologise to the Chinese community.
Honourable Nikki Kaye.
Mr. Speaker, it is time that the Labor Party apologised for what they have said and done regarding Chinese Kiwis and house buying in Auckland.
The Honourable Louise Upston.
Mr. Speaker, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the apology from the Labor Party.
Marama Fox.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And yes, it's a day of apologies. And lots of people have been talking about who should apologise to who. Isn't that ironic in Parliament that we should talk about such things?
And ironically, it was an argument over who should apologise to whom that led to John Key being ordered from the chamber by the Speaker, David Carter, on Wednesday.
The Prime Minister will leave the chamber. When I stand to my feet, it happened yesterday, I gave him fair warning. When I stand to my feet and call for order, he is to be treated no differently to any other member in this House. The Prime Minister will leave the chamber.
The Prime Minister's expulsion from the chamber, the first since Labor Speaker Margaret Wilson ordered Helen Clark to leave on June the 21st, 2005, was the culmination of an argument that began the previous day, when, with the so-called Panama Papers still dominating the headlines and the opposition bristling with questions for the Prime Minister about foreign trusts and their abuse by tax evaders and criminals, Mr. Key came to the debating chamber armed with some fresh information.
The House might like to know that of the Panama Papers data release, of the 500,000 times that Mossack Fonseca are linked to either a company, a trust, an individual or a reference, 200, less than 200 are foreign trusts registered in New Zealand. And by the way, IRD have cross-referenced them and all of them are disclosed to ensure they pay their fair share of tax.
Order.
Among questions for the Prime Minister was one from opposition leader Andrew Little about Mr. Key's personal lawyer.
How does he reconcile his claim that his close personal advisor had assured him that he had no links with Mossack Fonseca with today's revelations that show Mr. Whitney has had dealings with that firm?
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Firstly, I have no responsibility for Mr. Whitney or any other New Zealand. But Mr. Speaker, I stand by the statements that I've made in relation to Mr. Whitney, and I think incrimination by insinuation could be a very dangerous game because, Mr. Speaker, I took a moment just to look in the database and guess who's a beneficiary of one of the trusts? Oh, Greenpeace International. And guess who else is mentioned?
Order.
Amnesty
Order.
International.
Order. The Prime Minister. Order. If I have to ask, order, either the Prime Minister or the Deputy Prime Minister to leave, I will not hesitate to do so.
But it was Labor's David Parker who was ordered to leave after disputing one of Mr. Carter's rulings, while the Prime Minister also faced questions from Greens co-leader James Shaw.
If New Zealand is not a tax haven, why would Mossack Fonseca, a company which by its own admission has 95% of its business in avoiding tax, urge its clients to use New Zealand's foreign trust and company structures as a way of avoiding tax?
Well,
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, two things. Firstly, there can be quite legitimate reasons why people have a foreign trust. I suggest the member leave the House and ring Greenpeace, Amnesty and Red Cross, because they are implicated in the papers. But more importantly than that, just turn around and ask his colleague. Mojo Mathers has a foreign trust.
Supplementary.
Order. If it requires me to ask someone to leave because they consistently interject, I will do so. It's not my wish, but when the barrage continues...
Mojo Mathers, one of Mr Shaw's List MPs, asked the Speaker if she could respond to Mr Key's claim.
There's two ways forward. If the member seeks leave to make a personal explanation, I will put the leave it's over to the House. The alternative way, if the member thinks she has been misrepresented during this question time, she has the ability to refer to Standing Order 359.
That allows for members who believe they've been misrepresented to write to the Speaker, but Mojo Mathers wanted to do it on the spot by seeking the leave of the House to make a personal explanation.
I'd like to seek leave to make a personal
statement. Leave is sought to make a personal explanation, presumably in regards to a statement made by the Prime Minister. Leave is sought for that course of action. Is there any objection? There is none. Mojo Mathers.
Thank you. I would like to clarify that I am a beneficiary of a UK-based family trust. It is not a trust that I own, and it's not a foreign trust.
The member has... Order! Order!
Next day, facing more questions from all three main opposition parties, Mr Key got carried away when answering a question from Greens co-leader James Shaw, and facing down chamber, failed to notice when the Speaker got to his feet the signal for everyone else to sit down.
On Saturday night, I went on TV...
Order! Order! Prime Minister will resume his seat! Order! Order!
The Prime Minister had been answering one of three identical questions set down for him by the three main opposition parties. Opposition leader Andrew Little followed up the first question with this supplementary.
Why won't he give an apology to the Red Cross, Amnesty International and Greenpeace following his failed attempt yesterday to divert attention away from his support for the grubby foreign trust tax dodging industry?
Order. Speaker. The question's been asked. The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, because what I said yesterday is factually correct. If you go into the database, Speaker, it's quite simple. A very quick search of Greenpeace International shows you that it is a beneficiary of the Exodus Trust. What this actually goes to prove, Mr Speaker, is that all of the names of innocent New Zealanders that have been dragged across the TV sets and sullied by members of this House, all because they unwittingly end up on this database, should be taken with a grain of salt by other New Zealanders.
Mr Key was able to develop his argument that what's good for the goose is good for the gander with his answer to this question from Greens co-leader James Shaw.
Why will he not apologise to Greenpeace International, Amnesty and Mojo Mathers for misrepresenting them in the House yesterday?
Order, Mr Speaker. The Right Honourable Prime
Speaker,
Minister.
I haven't misrepresented Greenpeace. They're in the database as a beneficiary of the Exodus Trust. I don't like the fact they're there, but they are there. So in what way have I misrepresented? I think the member should do this. I think he should get on his feet and he should say, John, on Saturday
Order, order. Prime Minister will resume his seat. Order.
But Mr Key carried on and was ordered out, leaving the third question from New Zealand First unanswered and, according to the government's leader of the House, with no minister willing to answer it.
The Honourable Gerry Brown.
Mr Speaker, the Prime Minister is in the precincts of Parliament, but clearly not able to be here for the answering of this question. No other minister wants to answer on his behalf.
Order. Order.
The Speaker reminded Mr Brownlee of what they were supposed to be doing.
This is question time. It is the time to hold the government account, and that you ministers should answer questions unless it's in the public interest not to. Then the public of New Zealand will judge the appropriateness of the course of action the Minister Brownlee's determined to take. That becomes a matter for Mr Brownlee,
who wanted to carry on arguing the point.
Point of order, Mr Speaker.
Do you want to talk to that point of order?
Yes, I do, sir.
I'll allow Mr Brownlee.
What I would point out is while you have outlined that this is a time for the government to be held account, you've also required the Leader of the Government to be out of the chamber and unable to account. Therefore, I think it is perfectly reasonable that either the question is held over to another day, the Prime Minister is allowed to come back later in the day perhaps to answer it, or we simply don't answer it.
It should be very clear to the Minister, he sits very close to the Prime Minister, why the Prime Minister was asked to leave the chamber. When I stand to my feet, all members will immediately resume their feet. To carry on giving an answer when I'm calling order is completely unsatisfactory. A strong warning was given to the Prime Minister yesterday. He chose not to listen to that warning. He's only got himself to blame for the situation that's now arisen.
Mr Carter then invited the New Zealand First Party's Deputy Leader to ask his question.
Ron Mark, question number six.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister and asks, does he stand by all his statements?
The Honourable Bill English on behalf of the Prime Minister.
On behalf of the Prime Minister, yes.
Deputy Prime Minister Bill English, number two in the Cabinet, quickly stepping around his Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, who's number three, to rescue the situation by answering Mr Mark's question. And now from the drama of the debating chamber to the sobering atmosphere of the committee rooms with Rhys Lyon.
Pressures in the housing market were top of mind for Reserve Bank Governor Graham Wheeler when he appeared before the Finance and Expenditure Committee to present his latest financial stability report on Wednesday.
Imbalances in the housing market are increasing, with house price inflation lifting again in Auckland after cooling late last year and early this year. House prices have also begun increasing strongly in a number of regions across New Zealand, although house prices outside Auckland are generally much lower relative to incomes.
Mr Wheeler said he remained concerned about the potential impacts of Auckland's housing market on the banking system.
Further efforts to reduce the imbalance between housing demand and supply in Auckland remains essential. The Reserve Bank is closely monitoring developments to assess whether further financial policy measures would be appropriate.
Reserve Bank Governor Graham Wheeler speaking to the Finance and Expenditure Committee on Wednesday. Down the corridor the following day, the Justice and Electoral Committee was presented with a petition calling for an amendment to the Criminal Records Clean Slate Act 2004, which, as its name suggests, provides a clean slate for individuals previously found guilty of minor crimes if they've had no further convictions for 7 years. The petitioner, Eric Knight, wanted the law extended to cover people such as himself.
I started the petition because of personal difficulties that I have suffered during the early 80s when I was a young man and I got into trouble. I committed two burglaries and an assault and other offences. I was convicted and sentenced to three different sentences, which totaled 12 months in jail. I served these sentences and when I got out the last time, I resolved never to get into trouble again. The last time I was in trouble was in 1986, and I've kept out of trouble since.
Mr Knight said despite that, he's continued to face difficulty in finding work because of his criminal record. His petition requests that after 20 years of no convictions, a person's criminal record should be sealed if they've served less than 12 months in jail.
June 2016 marks 30 years since my last conviction, and all I ask is that Parliament considers amending the Clean Slate so that people like myself who've made mistakes in their youth and served less than 12 months of imprisonment have the chance to find employment and make a positive contribution to New Zealand and our families.
Eric Knight speaking on that petition to the Justice and Electoral Committee. Elsewhere on Thursday, the New Zealand hemp industry was the subject of a briefing to members of the Primary Production Committee from Hemp Industries Association President Richard Barge, who explained the difference between industrial hemp and recreational marijuana.
It is cannabis. It looks the same as cannabis. There's no two ways about that. But marijuana has a THC. Now, THC is a cannabinoid, which is associated with the psychoactive high. So what you've got is a recreational product that has between 3 and 30% THC. Industrial hemp has less than 0.35% THC. So there's no way there's enough significant amounts of THC in there to be a problem as far as the drug goes.
And Mr Barge suggested that's why the hemp industry should be controlled by the Ministry of Primary Industries rather than the Ministry of Health.
And this is where it sort of comes back to, you know, are they the best government organisation to actively sort of foster and run the industry, whereas MPI would be a better fit.
Hemp Industries Association President Richard Barge with that submission to the Primary Production Committee.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Back in the Chamber on Wednesday, question time and the general debate was followed by the introduction of a bill from Māori Party co-leader and Minister for Māori Development, Te Uerua Flavel.
Mr Speaker, the Ture Whenua Māori Act 1993 was arguably one of the most groundbreaking pieces of legislation of our generation because of the seismic shift it made in Māori land policy. This bill we're considering today, Mr Speaker, is one of the most important measures for Māori that this Parliament will consider in our time, and I am proud and humbled to be the steward of it into the House this afternoon.
Mr Flavel's enthusiasm for his bill was not shared by the three main opposition parties led by Labour's Meta Whaitere.
Mr Speaker, Labour's position is unambiguously clear. We will not be supporting this bill to first reading. As Labour's opening speaker, along with my colleagues, we will highlight why we are taking this position, specifically the concerns we have around the substance of the bill, the process followed, and the clear risks to Māori landowners.
Meta Whaitere's opposition to the bill surprised the Minister for Treaty of Waitangi Negotiations, Chris Finlayson.
I find it very difficult to believe that I'm standing in this House following a Member of Parliament having made a speech like that in opposition to what is a fundamental reform of Māori land law. It's incredible to have to say this in this place, but there have been more than 180 statutes relating to Māori land over the last 162 years.
And they were joined by the Te Tūra Whenua Māori Bill sent to the Māori Affairs Select Committee, which will be taking submissions on it up until June the 23rd. Mr Finlayson, meanwhile, also made this observation as Attorney-General in the debate on the first reading of the Social Security Legislation Rewrite Bill. That report from Rhys Lyon. Back in the Chamber on Wednesday, question time and the general debate was followed by the introduction of a bill from Māori Party co-leader and Minister for Māori Development, Te Uerua Flavel.
Mr Speaker, the Ture Whenua Māori Act 1993 was arguably one of the most groundbreaking pieces of legislation of our generation because of the seismic shift it made in Māori land policy. This bill we're considering today, Mr Speaker, is one of the most important measures for Māori that this Parliament will consider in our time, and I am proud and humbled to be the steward of it into the House this afternoon.
Mr Flavel's enthusiasm for his bill was not shared by the three main opposition parties led by Labour's Meta Whaitere.
Mr Speaker, Labour's position is unambiguously clear. We will not be supporting this bill to first reading. As Labour's opening speaker, along with my colleagues, we will highlight why we are taking this position, specifically the concerns we have around the substance of the bill, the process followed, and the clear risks to Māori landowners.
Meta Whaitere's opposition to the bill surprised the Minister for Treaty of Waitangi Negotiations, Chris Finlayson.
I find it very difficult to believe that I'm standing in this House following a Member of Parliament having made a speech like that in opposition to what is a fundamental reform of Māori land law. It's incredible to have to say this in this place, but there have been more than 180 statutes relating to Māori land over the last 162 years.
And they were joined by the Te Tūra Whenua Māori Bill sent to the Māori Affairs Select Committee, which will be taking submissions on it up until June the 23rd. Mr Finlayson, meanwhile, also made this observation as Attorney-General in the debate on the first reading of the Social Security Legislation Rewrite Bill.
A very wise person, a person who served this House for many, many years, the former Chief Parliamentary Counsel, the late George Tanner QC, once said, "A state in which people cannot plainly understand the laws might as well be a lawless state." So here we are. It's a great day for Parliament that we're dealing with this legislation to introduce what could be called a plain English approach to complex and often convoluted legislation. Too much of our legislation is wordy, is hard to understand. Mind you, it's going to take a lot to beat this real shocker from the United Kingdom contained in the Banking Act 1979 appeals procedure, England and Wales Regulations 1979, which says, quote, any reference in these regulations to a regulation is a reference to a regulation contained in these regulations. I mean, that is exactly the sort of rubbish that all too often is put in the statute book, and it means nothing. And therefore, one has to employ lawyers to interpret that kind of garbage. And while I'm very much in favour of lawyers getting a fair share of the fees, I think that that kind of reference is simply nonsense.
Attorney General Chris Finnison, and another speech worth a mention was from the Greens Foreign Affairs spokesman Kennedy Graham in Wednesday's general debate.
I rise to address the issue of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, sir. It is just as well I am doing so for 5 minutes in general debate, because there is no other chance for any Member of Parliament to address the treaty as a treaty. Yesterday, the Green Party proposed that the Select Committee report on the treaty, tabled 2 days ago, be subject to a parliamentary debate. The proposal was rejected. That is extraordinary, because the TPP is one of the most important treaties to affect New Zealand in many years. Yet the government, unwavering in the belief it knows best, feels no obligation to have the treaty examination by the Select Committee debated in Parliament. That would free up the time of the House to debate the real issue, which is the merits and demerits of the treaty itself. But no, we devote about 10 hours to debating 11 bills and are required by the Speaker to stay on message part by part and even clause by clause, that total 78 pages. It defies logic, even constitutional logic, to suggest that 10 hours should be devoted to the technicalities of draft law, judged by worldly but inexpert members of Parliament, but nothing to the general policy of the national interest on whether or not to negotiate, sign and ratify a major international agreement that imposes unprecedented new obligations on New Zealand. Mr. Speaker, these reflections raise the underlying question of the role of Parliament in general when it comes to treaty making. The Cabinet Manual at least tosses off an honest appraisal. Treaty making, it says, lies in the hands of the executive. What a masterful understatement. The executive decides whether to negotiate. It decides whether the negotiated agreement is worth signing. The executive, in the form of the relevant government department, drafts and submits the national interest analysis. This is a useless document because it is, by definition, redundant. They who have just negotiated a treaty are concluding that ratifying it is in the national interest. Of course they will. They just negotiated it. It is fine for them to convey the reasons why the Ministry believes it had been worth pursuing. The document could have passing value as an explanatory review, but it is a classic misconception and deceitful to the public interest to convey a descriptive pretense that this is an objective analysis of the national interest. Who do they think we are? I hereby announce in advance to the Speaker that because of the decision of the Business Committee not to hold a debate on the Committee's report on the treaty examination of the TPP agreement, I shall be allowing myself complete freedom to address the general policy aspect of the agreement during the three readings of the bill. There is no other way to ensure that the people of this country are given their democratic right not to witness inexpert legislative oversight, but informed political judgment based on natural contestation on the intrinsic merits of a major policy decision.
Green Foreign Affairs spokesman Kennedy Graham speaking in Wednesday's general debate. Now for a quick preview of next week, here's the Deputy Leader of the House.
Simon Bridges.
Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday, 24 May, the government will look to make progress on the Residential Tenancies Amendment Bill and a number of other bills on the order paper. Wednesday will be a Member's Day. On Wednesday morning, the House will sit under extended hours for the second reading of the Hinaeuru Claims Settlement Bill and the first readings of the Ngaitarangi and the Ngāpōtiki Claims Settlement Bill and the Te Awa Tupua Whanganui River Claims Settlement Bill. Budget 2016 will be delivered on Thursday, 26 May.
Deputy Leader of the House, Simon Bridges. I'm Tom Frewen, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.